Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. NFL Week 15. Oh, how the time flies when you're having a good time. I'm your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, a man who needs no introduction, but we kind of give him one anyways, the one, the only, Payne Insider.
I feel like you used that one already this week. What's going on with that material over there?
I mean, I need a new scriptwriter, apparently, because I'm too lazy to write my own stuff. You get to the dog days of the NFL season, you kind of see the finish line in sight, and you hope that your best laid plans come to fruition when it comes to going to the wagering window.
Couple weeks left. Don't check out on us.
I'm not checking out. We're going to try and finish with a flourish. Like we said last weekend, we got folks where they needed to go at the 49ers outright against the Broncos. Monday night's game, a little bit of an interesting result. And I wanted to get your take on that, not spending too much time there, Payne, before we get into the big five games we have on the docket today. What were your major takeaways from that Seahawks win against the Vikings, of course, ultimately leading to the premature dismissal of Vikings offensive coordinator John DeFilippo?
It was an ugly game, and I'm not quite sure what Mike Zimmer's expecting, really. And that was the one fear I did have with that game, was attempting to do something you can't do. And that's really why there's been that headbutting between DeFilippo and Zimmer. Zimmer, obviously a defensive guy, wants to run the ball a little bit more. DeFilippo in that offense, they've been very pass heavy. Like, they've been about top five pass run ratio throughout the entire season. I think you know what you were getting when you hired the man, but apparently not. And now this is the question this week, right? Probably a pretty good spot here against Miami, but what is the offense going to look like? And I'm not quite sure of that, because they don't have an ability. That offensive line is so bad, you don't have an ability just to bully someone. We saw that, right, on the 4th-and-1 and plus territory. I think it was third quarter, where they call a timeout. And it looks like Zimmer has his say in the play, and it's just this bulk formation where he's trying to bully somebody, and it's just impossible to do with that offensive line. So I don't know what's going to happen here for Minnesota, because the style in which Zimmer wants to play just isn't going to be conducive to success, I don't think.
Yeah, defensively, the team had a great chance to win that football game. If Kirk Cousins makes the play inside the five, you're talking about the Vikings going up 7-6 potentially. Or even if they make the field goal, well, we're still not quite sure how the referees picked up the flag with Bobby Wagner using his teammates for leverage. 6-3
football game. How did that get picked up?
I'm trying to figure that out. I can understand if you don't throw the flag in the first place, that's fine. But right, when you throw the flag, there's a clear infraction, and then you pick up the flag. I mean, we review, it feels like, almost everything in the NFL. I don't want to get to a CFL model. We're reviewing pass interference and everything else. But somewhere along the way, we have to find that decent middle ground for how things are going to work going forward with officiating.
That pass interference call is a little shaky, too. There was some hand fighting. It was 3-0 at the time, I believe. It led to Seattle taking the 6-0 lead. There was a pass interference on Xavier Rhodes. I was watching the All 22, I think, on either Tuesday morning. Was it Tuesday morning? Maybe it was yesterday morning. I went back and looked. The ball landed like 17 yards out of bounds. And the initial referee that's standing right in front of the plate didn't call it. It was the back judge from about, I don't know, 35, 40 yards away. So that was an interesting call, too.
Yeah, a lot of things unfolded. We know Seattle, a very difficult place to play, and the Seahawks continue to exceed expectations so far this year. Credit to Pete Carroll and, I guess, Bobby Wagner, the one remaining holdout from that defense, where you had grown accustomed to some household names there. Russell Wilson, a career low. But Seattle gets the cover.
Seattle had 2.7 yards per pass.
72 yards passing for Russell Wilson in that spot. 72 yards against a very good defense. But, hey, magical things happen up there in the Pacific Northwest. The Seahawks about a 99.7% win probability of getting into the playoffs?
Yeah, they have about a 99.2% chance to make the playoffs. So they're pretty set in stone with where they're heading for the holidays.
No doubt about it. But all right, two teams that aren't set in stone, and we have a little bit of Saturday football of the professional variety. Of course, Dave Mason of BetOnline.ag will be with us later in the show. We'll talk to him about where they're seeing some action, how the professional bettors are tipping their hands early and often. But Broncos and Browns, Payne. We're looking at the Broncos, a three-point favorite at BetOnline.ag. Total in this game, 45.5. We've seen a little dog and over money come into the market. And when we look at this Browns team, they're now sitting at 5-7-1. They've won 3 of 4 going into this week's game against Denver. In those victories, Baker Mayfield, 79% completion rate, 54-68, 712 yards passing, 8 touchdowns, no interceptions. What do we make of the Browns and the way they're trending? I mean, you were the first one on the Freddie Kitchens bandwagon, and their play calling really hasn't disappointed.
Cleveland's offense right now is humming. This feels like an elimination game, effectively. Now, I know both need some work to make the playoffs, but I think a loss here for me, there's pretty much the nail in the coffin. I would be shocked if the Browns don't have real success moving it again here, Todd, right? Like, it appears Baker's taking that next step with Freddie Kitchens. The confidence is really there. The game plans, the creativity is through the roof right now, which you mentioned isn't really a surprise to us. People want to make fun of his name, and we were telling you before the Chiefs game, like, hey, this dude can coach his ass off. He's a Bruce Arians disciple. I was hearing Freddie was far and away the best offensive mind in that Cleveland organization, so I'm glad he's getting a chance to put that on display. And if you have a chance, I'm going far left here. If you have a chance, kind of dig into his backstory a little bit. That's a guy who stared death in the eyes and kind of came out the other side. So Freddie Kitchens is as cool as a cucumber. His personality is a perfect match with Baker's. Now, if you actually look at what you asked me, since week 9, right, when Freddie Kitchens took over for the Browns, Baker Mayfield's been successful on 54% of his passes. That's fourth best in the NFL over that stretch. And a lot of times, if you look, like, if you're good at one thing, you're probably not in another. But whether it's Baker, you know, moving it efficiently down to down or taking these deep shots, he's been good in all areas. Cleveland's third in explosive pass offense since Kitchens took over, too. I think why I'm kind of emphasizing this specific area is here, the Broncos secondary. And you've kind of heard Todd and I talk about this all season. It's a real issue. That problem, I think, is intensified, obviously, with the loss of Chris Harris during the Bengals game 2 weeks ago. Last week against the 49ers, Isaac Yiddom went out with a separated shoulder, so he could be out for this one. You know, all told, you looked last week. Now, the 49ers went into this real shell in the second half, but Nick Mullins hung 8.5 yards per pass with 4 explosives through the air last week. So this is pretty simple. If Vaughn and Chubb don't both have, like, fantastic games, making Baker's life, like, just miserable, the Browns are going up and down the field here, right? Those two guys are going to need to play out of this world. But I think when you look at the Browns' offensive line, they've been really improved, especially with Freddie Kitchens, the things he's doing with that offensive line. If those two guys don't get pressure, I just think Cleveland scores a ton here, if that's the case.
When you look at that, and you mentioned Von Miller, of course, a not-so-private spat going back and forth with his head coach, Vance Joseph, this week. Took 3 false start penalties. Vance said maybe you have to try and be less aggressive. Von Miller comes out and say, well, if you look at my sack numbers, I'm going to continue to gamble the way I am and gauge snap count. This environment, Payne, and I think we talk about how tough it is to play in Denver in September. What can we expect from the Denver faithful, island game, Saturday night, cold weather, in terms of getting that home crowd into a frenzy and Von Miller taking advantage against a young quarterback?
So Von and Vance not playing nice again, huh? That's a shock. If you listen to the preview
news
podcast, there was a defender who called Vance Joseph an absolute cornball. Now we know who that was. This is a tough environment, obviously. One thing I did kind of read into a little bit is Cleveland's going to get out there a day early to handle the altitude. Greg Williams said they're actually going to get in a full practice this week at the stadium. He mentioned about having a bunch of young guys on his team, how their Tuesday practice was just awesome. Baker had a ton of zip on the ball. He was shocked. So he thought getting out there early, dealing with the altitude, was going to be a benefit. Getting in that extra practice and then having a young team would be able to handle this situation. Obviously, it's an all-in effort here. I think Denver could probably have some success offensively as well.
Yeah, you mentioned Denver's offense, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on this game because we have others that I think a lot of our listeners will find more fascinating. This is a Broncos team, Payne, that scored 6 first-quarter points in their last 5 games and have started with a 3-and-out 4 times. They're starting to show a little bit more competency running the football as they've made Phillip Lindsay their bell cow. But this is a receiving core, and I mean, I look at Cleveland, I feel like you're able to attack them with a vertical passing game. But do you trust the tandem of Cortland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton? I mean, these guys have been thrust into roles as receiver 1 and receiver 2 that they would have been buried on the depth chart behind the likes of Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders earlier in the campaign.
I think you're spot on, right? And I know you've done the reading and we've kind of sent notes back and forth, but to the listeners, Vance Joseph and Case Keenum haven't just hinted this week, but have like come out and said, hey, more tempo, more deep passes and bolt their pressers. Now, you know, Vance has kind of hinted at this. Case has kind of hinted at this being more aggressive all season. It just rarely comes to fruition, like on the field when the game starts. And then I think your bigger question is, like, does Denver's offense have the quarterback? Do they have the weapons, as you alluded to kind of execute that game plan? And I think the better question also is, like, is that the best way to attack Greg Williams' defense with these deep shots? If Denzel Ward doesn't play, he did miss the Carolina game with the concussion, hasn't practiced yet this week, maybe those deep shots could work. But I think it's been well noted, like, where you want to attack Cleveland's defense is with the short pass. That's been clear. We saw it again last week with Carolina. Since week 9, over 72% of short to intermediate passes have been completed on the Browns' defense. Doesn't matter the direction, but the Browns have actually been very good against deep balls outside. So leave it to Vance Joseph for that to be the game plan this week. you know, you look at Greg Williams. He loves to send blitzes, does so on 40% of the snaps. But then he employs, like, that deep off kind of secondary, like, you know, it's weird because, you know, when you're sending blitz, quarterback wants to get it out quick, and then your secondary is playing back, it leaves you susceptible to that short pass. So I think that's an area where potentially Keenum can have some success. Really, this comes down to, I think, Phillip Lindsay, and you talked about him. Cleveland's defense 27th in rushing success rate. They just give up a ton of explosive runs as well. So that's something I think Phillip Lindsay is just this nice one cut kind of speed back. He's going to have some success here on the ground, and he could hit a couple big ones too as well.
One last quote I'll leave you with on this game, Demaryius Randall. Some interesting things to say on the Cleveland Browns playoff dream. We feel like we're a playoff team. We feel like we deserve one of them 6 spots. We know we dug ourselves in a hole, and we know that we need some help. It starts with us winning out. If we win out, they just better not let us in the playoffs. A far cry from what we've grown accustomed to with Browns culture in recent years, a team that's clearly on the up and up moving forward.
To two Sunday, confident guys.
Hey, that's what it takes sometimes. You got to believe it. If you believe it, you can achieve it, right? Isn't that what they say?
I get you. But Baker and Greg, I mean, those are two confident guys.
We'll have to see if Greg Williams can throw his hat in the ring and maybe secure the full-time head coaching spot. All right, on to Sunday, two teams that are extremely confident. The Indianapolis Colts playing host to the Dallas Cowboys. You're looking at the Colts, a 2.5-point favorite. Lay $1.20 at betonline.ag. Total in this game has ticked up a touch this morning, out to 47.5. We look at the Cowboys, Payne, winners of 5 straight games. They've covered all 5 after their 3-5 start. Last week against the Eagles, the most yards gained by Dallas in a game since 1978, and it was the first time in franchise history the Cowboys had a 400-yard passer, a 200-yard receiver, and a 100-yard rusher. But this is a much different situation here, and the Cowboys, they're going to have plenty of chances to close up the division. When we look at the handicap here, I think it's safe to say the Colts may need this football game a little bit more.
You had me checking my phone there on the over money that was just coming in on that total.
I don't want you to get rattled. I mean, I got a number of notes last week when there was an awkward silence on the podcast and we talked about the Cowboys Eagles. The game gets steamed over. You and I go, well, I guess that's now officially off the lean list. Watch the first 3 quarters and go, hey, we finally dodged a bullet. And sure enough, they put together a ridiculous fourth quarter and it would have been a nice cash.
I venture to say some of the D-gens cashed a nice one there. got lucky, but yes. What were we talking about here? You were talking about
how we try and value the Cowboys. Yeah. Who are playing some of the best football against a Colts team who clearly on paper needs this game a lot more than Dallas.
Right. Like, I mean, at its core, you probably have to ask yourself, like, when does this letdown happen from Dallas? Like, you know, how many games in a row can you play at your peak? It's five straight wins. It's just five all-in efforts. You go from 3-5 to 8-5. And this is another team. You look at Dallas, 99% chance to win the NFC East division and host this playoff game. And you look at Wentz now as potentially being shut down for the season. Like, what's the motivation here to kind of travel to a non-conference foe and just produce like this, another all-in effort here? So I would, it's going to tell you a lot about Dallas if they show up this week. If they do, I mean, it's going to be a tough team, a team you don't want to play in the playoffs. But I could certainly see a scenario where, you know, maybe it's a little down effort.
When we look at the Cowboys, Payne, so much of their success obviously predicated on what Zeke Elliott brings to the table. Team 6-0 when he has more than 20 carries, 2-5 when he has 20 or fewer. We talked about it on the recap of Week 14 about how they're getting Elliott more involved, not only running between the tackles, but catching balls out of the backfield. Meanwhile, I look at the Colts' rush defense, and there's some coaching stuff that I think that we'll talk about as well. Since Week 10, the Colts' yards per game allowed 91, 8th in the league. Yards per carry, 2nd best in the league at 3.4, and rushes for loss 23. That's a league best. Do you buy what we've seen from the Colts defensively, especially in their ability to stop the run?
I mean, I think they've certainly trended up, right? Like, I think when you look at this matchup, right, it's the Cowboys offense, the Colts defense. Those two units have just been vastly improved, and both have really come on. And you would say the last month or two, right? And we've talked about the Cowboys offense improvement last Thursday. And a lot of that is obviously Amari Cooper, right? And it's the passing game has just flipped that switch. And we discussed some of those things about Amari Cooper in week 8, right? Dallas, they got him. They acquired him at that point. Since that time, 11th in passing success rate at 51%. Without him the first 7 weeks or so, 29th in the NFL, just 38% of passes grade successful. So a 13% increase there. And you mentioned Zeke, you know, I think on, was it Monday, about how much more space has been open for him with Amari Cooper. And that's a total fact, right? The first 7 games of the season, 794 total yards. Last 6 games with Cooper on the field, 970. So you're talking about 176 more yards in one less game. And if you're measuring it per touch, it's over a half yard per touch more as well. The Indy defense has improved. You pointed that out last week. I just think it's about what they're doing internally, right? And I think a lot of people will kind of snap back and listen and be like, hey, Indy hasn't played anybody. And, you know, that's somewhat true. They have played the easiest schedule of offenses in the NFL, but they're 11th in defensive efficiency. And you have a very easy comparable because last season they played the 3rd easiest schedule. So the schedule's on par and they finished 27th. So it's been huge. You mentioned Matt Eberflus, I think, or that's where you wanted to go. He is the new Indy defensive coordinator. He's been fantastic. I think Chris Ballard deserves a ton of credit drafting and kind of changing both the style and the culture with those guys. And I think this should play a role, right? We know Eberflus is familiar with Dallas. He was there last year, but it was on both sides of the ball. I don't think people know this. He was not only Dallas's linebackers coach, but he was the passing game coordinator for Dallas as well. So I think the familiarity there is going to help a little bit. Colts, I think, are going to have to stop Zeke in the pass game. Indy has really struggled defending running backs through the air big time. And we've kind of mentioned this, the concerted effort for Dallas's offense, getting the ball to Zeke in the pass game. He's basically their number two receiver right now, had 13 targets a week ago. So that's where I think you mentioned potentially Indy being able to stop him on the ground. I think so. But it's through the air that we, I think, have to worry here because Indy's just not good in that department. Maybe the sign, I guess, to maybe what we talked about at the beginning, is Dallas all in here? Let's see what they do with some of these injuries. I think it'll kind of tip the hand here on what Dallas thinks about this game because you have Zach Martin who retweaked his MCL injury. He's been kind of playing through that. You listen to Jerry Jones' weekly radio spot, which is fun to do. You should listen to it anyway because he's a crazy man. But
oh, tremendous. His comments this week about talking about how we've been down and out and what he does when he gets in and out of the shower. I mean, it's some of the creepiest radio material I've ever heard in my entire life.
It's a good listen. It's funny. Even if you're not a Cowboys fan, you're like, oh, man, this guy's delusional. But he kind of suggested it might be a good time to give Zach Martin a week off. And sometimes when Jerry Jones says a suggestion, it becomes more than a suggestion. So, you know, let's see what happens there. Zach, Jesus Christ, Zach. That's a combination of Zeke and Dak, I believe. Zeke didn't practice Wednesday. He's been dealing with the neck injury. I think he plays here, and he's made it clear that he wants the rushing record, and I think he's only like 59 yards ahead of Gurley. So let's see how much they use him. Sean Lee returned to practice on a limited basis on Wednesday. It's something to monitor if he can get in a full practice. Usually you're looking for about, I don't know, four straight practices. Let's see if they, I don't know if there's a need to rush him back this week. But so again, I think all these injuries that we monitor, let's see the path Dallas chooses with these injuries. It'll tell you, I think, a lot of the mindset here for the team.
Yeah, it should be a great game. We've seen the Colts take advantage of teams coming into that building with letdown spots. Obviously, Indy needing to win out and maybe get a little bit of help to get into the postseason. We've clearly seen Andrew Luck and company taking things to the next level as the offense has looked much more dynamic. From a dynamic offense, though, Payne, to an offense that looks like it's been stuck in mud of late, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, home underdogs against the New England Patriots. You're looking at New England, a 2-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 52. And I don't want to say it's time for the Steelers to push the panic button, but when you look at what Tom Brady has been able to accomplish against this Steelers team, and you're coming in mired in a three-game losing streak, I don't think this is going to be the recipe for success. Brady, 11-2 as a starter versus the Steelers, 30 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. His 113 passer rating against the Steelers, which includes playoff victories as well, is the highest by any quarterback against a single opponent since the 1970 merger with a minimum of 10 starts. Brady, 45-12 record after a loss. I give you all that to ask you this. How do the Steelers go about trying to make defensive adjustments to slow down a man who's really been their kryptonite in recent meetings?
I was trying to take all those things down. Listen, I think this is the obvious question and the discussion point because you have to make it, right? Is Mike Tomlin and that Pittsburgh Steelers defense going to change its ways? And you would hope, I think, if you're a Steelers fan. I'm just not sure it's reality because maybe they don't have the pieces. Maybe Mike Tomlin is unwilling to adapt, or maybe he's just not good enough schematically, right? But there's been like ample opportunity to adjust in these situations, and Mike Tomlin just hasn't. It doesn't matter if it's against New England. Doesn't matter if it's on Sunday night against the Chargers. Hey, we're going to try to cover the best receiver on the field with a linebacker. It just hasn't worked. When you look at that style, there's a reason Pittsburgh isn't able to defend the middle of the field or the slot. You look at the matchup recent times, Edelman has 29 receptions the last three meetings. I don't think Gronk is 100%, but if he's feeling well enough, he's going to be a factor because you look at the Steelers, they've allowed 73 receptions to tight ends. Again, that's the fourth most in the NFL. So right in the middle of the field, they just can't defend that area. They've given up 7 touchdowns to tight ends as well, about 66 yards per game. Sean Davis hasn't practiced yet this week. He is a stud safety. I think he gives it a go, but if he's not 100% or he doesn't play or he leaves the game early, I mean, it's just going to make the middle of the field even more vulnerable. About 3 weeks ago, the Steelers went away from John Bostic at linebacker, who I thought was playing pretty well. He's their best cover linebacker. And now it's all about like LJ Fort and Vince Williams. I'm familiar with Vince Williams. He is a Florida State guy. Neither of those guys are going to be able to cover Edelman in the slot or Gronk over the middle. I was shocked to see this when I dug into the game a little bit because I thought, hey, maybe this is a James White game, but the Steelers have done really well defending running back passes. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds if there is more James White. Obviously, like that's like a logjam right now in the Patriots' backfield. So White's snap count has really declined. You have Sony Michel, and now Burkhead's returning a little bit. There was quotes this week, and I know the Patriots and the O-line coach Dante Scarnecchia, they've talked about wanting to run the ball. I'm just not sure that's the recipe for beating the Steelers here. It's really tough to run right at Pittsburgh. You have to find the edges there. I'm looking at Pittsburgh 7th best in rushing success rate, just 44% of runs grade successful. So you can't run it right at Pittsburgh. It has to be this, I think it's more sophisticated of a ground game. It has to be on the edges. It has to be attacking their corners who don't really love to tackle. So I think that's interesting. The pass game, I would think it's a lot of max protect for Brady. We know how kind of blitz happy the Steelers defense has been. That's really the reason for their resurgence lately. Pittsburgh's number one in the NFL in adjusted sack rate. 45 total takedowns of the quarterback this season. And obviously no quarterback likes pressure, right? Obviously that goes without saying, like, quarterbacks perform much worse under pressure versus when they're kept clean. But Brady's been disastrous when under pressure. Last week, you look at like the end of the half against Miami, and that was basically a summarization of the entire season of Brady when he's under pressure. He's completing 44% of his passes. And you just kind of look at that comparison. Kirk Cousins, who's kind of been all the butt of jokes here the last 72 hours, he's completing 65% of his passes under pressure. Breeze, 62%. Phillip Rivers, who we'll see tonight, over 58%. So you just kind of have that gauge. Eli Manning, 53%. It's been a real problem here for Brady. So let's see kind of how that looks game day.
Well, and you mentioned the ground game, of course. When we look at the Steelers, they have some major question marks, which I don't really feel are questions. I know you and I discussed James Conner still very much a long shot to be out there. 40 rushing yards in their loss against the Raiders. When we look at the Steelers this season, in games where they've run for less than 75 yards, they're 1-5. I mean, they're averaging 89 rushing yards per game, which is good enough for 29th in the NFL. And Payne, flat out, the numbers don't lie. With and without James Conner, I mean, with James Conner, they average 28.8 points per game. Without him, 21. Rushing yards per game with 93.1, that drops to 40 without, and yards per carry is more than halved from 4.25 to 2.1. If the Steelers don't have Connor out there, I mean, how do they provide a semblance of a balanced attack against the New England defense that, in my opinion, is more vulnerable to ground and pound than it is the aerial assault?
Yeah, I think this is probably what decides the game here, is this matchup, because you have two struggling units right now. And so who can get back on track, I think, ultimately decides it. Obviously, this is a game where you're going to rely on Big Ben and Juju and Brown, but there has to be some semblance of balance, as you mentioned. And I know, like, Ridley came out this week and he'd love some revenge. He's talked about the Patriots throwing him to the curb like trash after his injury. Brandon Bolden got some revenge last week. The problem is, like, Kelvin, like, Ridley just isn't very good, right? He's just not. And Jalen Samuels, I think, did a pretty good job last week catching the ball. Had, I think, caught all 7 of his targets. So, you know, that was a positive. But Pittsburgh just doesn't have a competent runner. And you look even last week, this is against one of the worst run defenses in the entire NFL. And Ridley has 5 carries, averaged less than a yard. He was successful on 20% of his runs. Samuels had 2.5 a carry, successful on 27% of his runs. Neither record an explosive run. I just don't like any of their running backs, so I don't know how they're going to be able to run, and that's kind of where New England's been vulnerable. The 4 games they've lost this year, they've surrendered more than 100 yards on the ground in those games. You look at New England, they've allowed 22% of all runs to grade explosive the last 4 weeks.
That ain't very good.
It's not very good at all. I don't know if Pittsburgh can do anything here to keep them balanced. I just don't like any of the running backs. Maybe it's an extension of the ground game. Maybe you're using Jalen Samuels a little bit more with the dink and dunk stuff. Use that short passing game. I think that would make some sense. We know there's not a ton of speed at linebacker for the Patriots. And this could be a spot where Jalen Samuels is really effective catching passes again. Right, you talk about that lack of speed with New England's linebackers. They've allowed 75 receptions to running backs. That's 10th worst in the NFL. Tight ends have had some success against the Patriots defense. Maybe there's a Vance McDonald sighting as well. This is the one matchup here I think that's going to be fun to watch. If New England can generate pressure, and that's a big if, because we know how stout that Steelers offensive line is in pass protection. They've allowed 18 sacks all season, number one in the NFL in adjusted sack rate. On the surface, though, it looks like New England doesn't do a good job getting to the quarterback, right? That's just in their sack numbers. They actually are oddly good at pressuring the quarterback And sometimes that can be enough. So that'll be the matchup here, I think, to watch as well. Can New England get some pressure on Big Ben? Obviously, he's playing this week. Tends to be a little bit of a drama queen. I would expect Big Ben here to be pretty healthy for this game.
Last but not least, and we'll get Dave's take here because I'm very interested to see how the public is betting this game. Clearly the marquee matchup of Sunday afternoon. Are you surprised at all by this number? I know we talked about a look-ahead number, had the Steelers a 1.5-point chalk. We've kind of moved to no man's land the other way with the Patriots opening 1.5, actually leaking out to 2.5 in some locations now. Do we think there's a chance that this number would get to 3 before there's finally an appetite from professionals to back the Steelers here?
It's so odd because by the pure power number, Pittsburgh should be a bet here, but no one's really running to do it based on style, based on matchup, based on history. I did find it interesting that the first book to market here came out West and they opened 1 and it immediately got sent to 4 and 4 did not last. I don't know where this line inevitably goes. I feel like 2.5 is probably a good number if you're a sports book, right? You can play the idea of the history of this game, and you probably aren't going to get smacked completely by professional bettors either. What do the bet splits look like on this game? Do you know? Do you have them off the top of your head?
No, I haven't even looked at them. Hopefully, Dave can shed some light on there. I have to imagine just by watching the market and knowing how perception has changed that we're talking, you know, what do you figure, 65-35, 70-30, somewhere in that ballpark?
You're sending me down to the bet split hell here.
I'm sending you down a rabbit hole you're never going to get out of before the end of the podcast.
Bet split guy, although I do monitor them a little bit more in primetime games just because I think that's a little bit more telling. Jesus. Yeah. Right now, almost 80% of tickets. Interesting. I don't know where this game's going to go now. I would think at 3, you're going to see some value bets just based on Math Guy's numbers. Like, it's just, this number's interesting. A very good teaser like this week.
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting part, too. I know we talk about time slots and how it plays a role. When you have 2 games on Saturday, there are actually only 2 games taking place in that 4 Eastern time slot, and this one goes 20 minutes after the Seahawks and 49ers kickoff. So very interesting to see what happens in that 20-minute window should people try and have a good day early, want to put their money back into action, and things of that nature. But from the afternoon treat into a Sunday night, I'm going to call it a dud because I think that's what it is right now.
Yep.
The Rams are an 11-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 52.5. Of course, the big story here, Carson Wentz, will he or won't he play? I think we're both in agreement that he won't be out there. The Eagles are on pace to be the first defending Super Bowl champion with a losing record since the Bucs in 2003. I mean, this team 21st in the league in points per game. They're 28th running the football. I mean, defense has been an absolute dumpster fire. I mean, honestly, I don't want to spend a ton of time in this game because I don't think it's that intriguing. But what does the Eagles potentially shutting down Carson Wentz tell you about how they view the remainder of this season and maybe his durability as their franchise quarterback going forward?
Yeah, I mean, this game clearly lost a lot of its luster, so we don't have to spend a ton of time here. And you're just looking at Carson Wentz like a lot of reoccurring injuries. He seems to have one every single year. So hopefully he can get back healthy. And I think if you sit down Wentz, what does that signal to the rest of the team? It pretty much says the season's over at this point, despite them having about a 13% chance to make the playoffs. And this is really an Eagles team, right, that hasn't needed, go all the way back to the preview podcast. And we've talked about lack of motivation, guys not really trying or having a ton of effort in this Eagles locker room, kind of skating after the Super Bowl win. So, like, they've needed motivating for large stretches of this season. This is a team that if you're suddenly sitting down your franchise quarterback signaling, hey, the season's over, what is this going to look like? Now, oddly, and it seems like a weird time to go if you were going to go on Philadelphia, I saw a little money come into the market this morning at 11. I think this is kind of the tweener number we're looking at. This is once Carson Wentz officially gets announced out, where does this line go? And I think you're probably in that 12.5 region. Now, I get the idea that the way Carson Wentz has played this year, it's probably not this massive drop off like people think. I think you're getting to at least 13. I would envision, especially
yeah, I mean,
with the Sunday nighter.
Yeah, I don't see anybody running to try and make a strong case for the Eagles, knowing how Nick Foles looked early on in the campaign. And then, I mean, I guess when we look at the other side of the equation, Payne, I mean, This is a Rams team, 5-0 after a loss under Coach McVay. They average almost 35 points per game. They've scored 30-plus points in 10 out of 13 games, and everything that could go wrong did go wrong for them offensively last week. I mean, Jared Goff has struggled over his last three games. I mean, I love to make a case for an over-exaggeration, an overcompensation in the market when a starter is out, but I'm not sure even I'd have an appetite if this got to 14 to try and back Philadelphia, knowing that the Rams are going to have a massive mismatch against this Eagles defense.
So, you know, the Rams are finally back home. This is just the fourth time in the last 11 weeks. I think they're going to have some success here, obviously, no matter what they do, right? Philly's run defense just isn't very good right now. 50% of runs have graded successful since week 4. Their secondary is still decimated by injuries, and now you have a pissed off Rams team. And we kind of outlined this last week on how you need to beat this Rams offense. And it's stopping Gurley, and it's putting everything on Goff's shoulders, and it's getting pressure on him. He will wilt under pressure, which is exactly what happened last week. The problem is Philly's 27th in adjusted sack rate. They don't really get after the quarterback overly well, especially recently with a lot of the injuries to that front seven. But if you can get pressure on Goff, he's completing 39% of his passes, and he's got a 53 passer rating. He's not very good when the pressure's on. I just don't see a situation where the Eagles' defense is potentially going to care. Or they're going to be able to stop Gurley, or they're going to be able to stop McVay's wizardry through the air. Realistically, and I can kind of say what we were going to do here, and we don't have a single penny down in this game. We're waiting for limits to increase, and we were going to use the Rams, and they're going to probably be the key in most of our teasers this week. Unfortunately, now at the current number, that's out of the equation a little bit. And I think the other factor is Talib as well. Right, the five games he's played in this season, the Rams have allowed under 14 points. He is massive for this defense. He is a huge get back. I think the Rams, if they can get healthy offensively here with Talib back, it really solidifies that defense. It'll be interesting to see where this total goes. I could envision it continuing to tick down. At this point, I don't have a ton in this game. Maybe. And it sucks because you would need Philly to kind of engage in a game that's a little back and forth for the Rams to continue to put their foot to the pedal. But maybe if this comes down a little bit, there could be some value in a Rams team total. I don't know. I'm kind of, again, flustered that we were waiting for limits to rise here to get in on a teaser, and we don't have that option right now.
You're not going to quite work out. I mean, a lot of what you said, couldn't agree more. And I think maybe we see an increased workload for Todd Gurley, who's been underutilized, in my opinion, over the last couple games. He's had fewer than 20 touches in 4 out of the last 5. He comes into this one off a season low in touches.
Do you think that's by design?
And rushing yards. I actually do. I think that Coach McVay realized that they had put such a workload on him early in the year, they had run away with the division. Now, I know they're probably not going to get the one seed. They're going to have to win out and need help from the Saints. But I have to think he wants Gurley at 100% for a lot of things we talked about, because this Rams offense, if they can't run the football and Gurley can't get going, Jared Goff, for me, and what I've seen, and you watch a lot more All-22 than I do, isn't that guy that can win a game entirely with his arm if the Rams are made one-dimensional in the playoffs by the Cowboys or the Bears or the Saints, teams that they'll most likely see in the divisional round.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'd kind of wondered. I know you had Gurley on your fantasy team, and something we talked about, them running away and hiding a little bit. And obviously they did that within their own division. But now, man, you just see a scenario where it's like, hey, are they going to be able to win in New Orleans? That becomes the big question. So I don't think they're going to be throwing these games away and not playing Gurley at all, but his touch count should be interesting to monitor. I know Brown, the backup, who they really like, was out last week. So, yeah, it's something interesting to monitor there, that's for sure. But I agree with you on the Goff situation. I think if he doesn't have pressure, he's completely fine. But with pressure, man, he is a different dude that can be beat, that's for sure.
It should be a game that, like you said, had intrigue before. People will bet it because it is Sunday night football, but clearly not a game that we would call must-see TV unlike the game that'll take place on Thursday. But before we get there, we have a man waiting in the wings to share the sportsbook perspective. He joins us every Thursday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow Dave Mason on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, you get a lot of underdogs not only covering last weekend but winning outright in the form of the Miami Dolphins. You get the Raiders doing the dirty deed to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I have to imagine that's a pretty good weekend for the house.
Yeah, I mean, those two games weren't that good. We actually lost on that Raiders game. People lost faith in the Steelers a couple weeks ago, so we actually lost some money on the Raiders. And surprisingly, that the Dolphins-Patriots game, the action was pretty close to 50-50. So, yeah, one of those weeks where the Patriots get beat and we don't win, that's always a kick in the nuts. But overall, it was a good weekend overall. Players profited, but their biggest profit by far was the Seahawks. Then second and third were Packers and Titans, so that was down the line a bit. The house, the Bears, was our biggest profit by far, followed by the Ravens and Jets.
Dave, when you look at things at this point in the season, do you start to see handle decline a little bit between the post-Thanksgiving, pre-Christmas rush? No college football really to speak of for the weekend, and the NFL, you kind of go through the dog days the last 4 weeks of the season or so?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, it dips in December. You know, they're just the game, like you said, there's no real college football. The bowl games start, but they're getting, I mean, you know, that's not driving a lot of action. Those are, people on the site will bet them, but, you know, it doesn't get a lot of new people coming in for the early bowl games. You know, NFL's winding down. So December, and, you know, the holidays, and, you know, everybody's busy with the holiday stuff, and buying presents and all that stuff. So, you know,
because they're betting from their pocket and not their bankroll.
That's right. So yeah, December slows a little bit, but the action's still great. But it's just not like that September, October action, and even November. So it slows, and then, you know, once late December after Christmas and those big bowl games pick up, and that's when a lot of people get back in the action.
Dave, I know action's a little bit down, but what does that look like for NFL Week 15? Any liabilities that are giving the house some issues, or any early sharp action?
Early sharp, a little bit. We got that under tonight, and that big game, the Chargers-Chiefs under 55. That's down to 53.5. Giants minus 2.5, minus 110. It's minus 2.5, minus 123. And 49ers from plus 4.5 to plus 6, or plus 6 to plus 4.5, that's now plus 4. Those are the sharp sides so far. As far as public goes, Chiefs tonight, 64% of the bettors are the Chiefs. Texans, 85% on the Texans. Bears, 68%. Seahawks, 69%. Patriots, 82%. So we'll be sweating the Patriots this week. And Saints, 77%.
Always interesting when it becomes the usual suspects again with the likes of the Patriots, and I have to imagine the Saints, as you said, Dave. A big game in the standalone time slot on Monday night. But for those players looking to try and get back into the mix, maybe reload their accounts or become first-time depositors with you guys at betonline.ag, what kind of promotions can they expect at the shop just in time for the holidays?
If you do not have a betonline.ag account, sign up for one. Use promo code 75BTB on your first ever deposit to get a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and have not taken advantage of the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bet the board.
Bowl games, basketball, both of the college and the NBA variety, hockey, low juice there. Plenty of different ways to put your wagering wallet to good use for you during the month of December. Dave, thanks as always for joining us. I know you are a busy, busy man this time of year, and we'll look forward to catching up with you same time next week.
Sounds good. Have a good weekend, fellas.
Not entirely surprising, Payne, that on Saturday the books are going to be rooting for the Jets against the Texans. I am a little bit surprised about the game we're going to get to next, though. Dave's saying about 65% of the tickets at betonline.ag coming in on Kansas City. And I guess it makes sense, but we'll get to that game in a second. Anything else that Dave said really stand out to you?
I think he might get some help on that Houston Jets game.
I have to imagine there might be a little bit of an appetite for a dog, but either way, a game that I don't want to spend.
I agree. I'm not a cat fan.
All right, into tonight's game, Kansas City, and I chopped up that segue pretty good there. The Chiefs, a 3.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on the game, 53.5, as they welcome in the Los Angeles Chargers. And Andy Reid has had complete mastery over the Chargers. When we look at the way this series has gone over the last 9 meetings, Kansas City 9-0 straight up, 7-2 against the spread, their point differential of +109. And Arrowhead, it's been where teams go to die. 18-4 straight up for Kansas City the last 22 games they've played at home. Will this finally be the week or game on a short week nonetheless where the Chargers can break that Kansas City hex?
I don't know. It's going to be tough. I was surprised, though, that Melvin Gordon got in some limited practices. That was really surprising to me. I know he's a tough guy, and you'd obviously love to have him out there. And now he's in that, upgraded to game time decision thing. I'm not sure you risk him here in this game if he's, 70%. Long term, I think, would need to be the focus there. We know Austin Eckler's out, so I think this could be the Justin Jackson show. He's looked good to me. He's averaging 5 yards a rush. He's averaging 12 a catch. He looks fresh, right? He hasn't taken a pounding all season. They took him off the practice squad a couple weeks ago. And then obviously, when you look at the Chiefs defense, that's kind of where they struggle, right? It's the run game, obviously. Last week didn't improve things. Still dead last there, 32nd rushing success rate. The Chiefs also don't really defend running back passes well. They've given up a league-high 830 receiving yards to backs along with 6 touchdowns. So I think, Justin Jackson will have a good game here if he is the main focus. And maybe it's a split role if Melvin Gordon does play. This is where you would – I mean, this is why – Hunter Henry being out for the season is so sad, because this would be the matchup where he is just capable of dominating. He would absolutely feast here. Maybe this is, you line Terrell Williams up in that kind of role on passing downs. He's big enough. He's way better than Gates at this point. But maybe Antonio has one of those surprising efforts here. And because you look at how this Chiefs defense operates, they need to go out, man, and get 2 or 3 linebackers this offseason. They're just dreadful in that area. I was looking at this morning. 923 yards and 8 touchdowns surrendered to tight ends, man. If Antonio Gates can have a resurrection tonight, that would be potentially a positive, or a way that the Chargers can shock the world here, because I know the spread isn't there, but they just have not had success at Arrowhead. When you look at kind of why the Chiefs defense is better at home, I think it's because they're stopping the pass, right? And we talk about this in 2018. Passing efficiency correlates to wins 4 times more than running the ball. And I know, you listen to Andy Reid, you listen to the defensive coordinator, Bob Sutton, and they've kind of scoffed at the idea of giving up chunks in the ground game. I don't think they want to be this bad, but I think they know if they can defend the pass, That's a positive. And at this point, if you look at Kansas City's defense, at Arrowhead in their games this season, they've allowed 41% of passes to grade successful. That's 6% better than the league average. On the road, they've allowed almost 49% of passes to grade successful. That's 3% worse than the league average. So there's been that big split there. Maybe Eric Berry coming back this week can help that secondary even more. We know Phillip Rivers has had his struggles here. It's a really tough place to communicate. Arrowhead is by far the loudest stadium in the NFL. It's by design. It's how their stadium was designed. This Chiefs organization has kind of incentivized fans to be louder than usual. They actually give discounts, Todd, on season tickets based on the number of penalties handed out for opponent false starts. So if you've done some reading, there's been officials that have really discussed over the years coming out and throwing penalties due to excessively loud noise. So that'll be an interesting element here. Can that Chargers offense handle the Arrowhead environment? They haven't shown an ability to do that in recent times. Maybe there's a change here. I think that's interesting, just kind of see how this Chargers offense is going to operate. The areas that you want to attack the Chargers in, I don't know if the Chargers, or I'm sorry, the areas you want to attack the Chiefs defense in, I don't know if the Chargers have those parts right now, if Melvin Gordon isn't 100%, you know, without a capable tight end. Those are the areas you really want to attack Kansas City's defense in. So, scary there when you're looking at this matchup-wise.
When I look at this campaign, there could be some weather in the forecast as well. Obviously, cold this time of year in Kansas City. We could see a little bit of the wet stuff coming down. Wind doesn't look to be all that favorable. When I try and factor that into an equation for a game like this, and you actually brought up a great point when we initially discussed some of the games on Monday off air, talking about, do you want to trust your third and fourth string running back if you're the Chargers, or do you want to put the ball in the hands of Philip Rivers, first ballot Hall of Famer, arguably having the best season of his career at this point when you look at some of the numbers he's put up from a touchdown standpoint, on pace for 114 passer rating, which would be his career high and subsequently a franchise high as well. Put yourself in the shoes of Anthony Lynn and the Chargers. How do you go about approaching this game knowing that, yes, like you said, you might not have Melvin Gordon and be able to run the ball 30 to 40 times and attack the Chiefs where you need to, running the ball between the tackles?
You know, when I was digging into this a little bit, and you mentioned the weather, I think initially a lot of people thought the weather was going to be significantly worse. And that's, you know, it's tough, right? Weathermen aren't like accurate all the time. Like, it's tough for us to be. And we have basically all the technology like those folks to kind of gauge where this is going. Right now, they're talking about like 17% chance of precipitation for this game. It's about 40 degrees. It is supposed to be a little bit windier, 15 degrees steady. The gusts are going to be a little bit higher. Patrick Mahomes' arm, though, I don't know if it's a real factor with that kind of arm. I'm going to be intrigued to see, though, just what we talked about, how Andy Reid is going to attempt to attack the Chargers defense, right? We know without Corey Legit, without Brandon Mebane, without Denzel Perriman in the middle of that defense, they're susceptible to the run. And I think that's the best question. Let's see what Andy Reid is going to do, because I think it's more efficient to let Patty air it out than hand it off to your third or fourth string running back. And even in like the shootout we saw against the Rams, it was more pass and less hunt because Andy Reid knows what's efficient and it's throwing the ball. I don't think the elements are going to be as impactful as I mentioned to Mahomes. I think he's got the arm strength to kind of negate that. I think the positive here is he's going to have his best weapon back in Tariq Hill. He's gotten in multiple practices this week despite that heel injury. And you look at a guy that's just feasted against the defense, it's him, right? As good as the Chargers secondary is, they struggle with speed at times. It's very clear. And we know Tariq Hill is just has gobs of speed. He's got four touchdowns in the last three meetings, and he's just toasting these Chargers corners. And you look at kind of the design of the offense and how accurate Patty Mahomes is. The run after catch element. Mahomes leads the NFL in yards after the catch because he's so accurate. So I think he's done a great job of throwing guys open, which is important. But when you have all these talented guys out, right? Hunt not there anymore. Watkins out. More of this is placed on Patty Mahomes' shoulder. So when he's throwing to guys like potentially Kelvin Benjamin, who knows? Let's see if he gets snaps in there. I know they've fed him this limited package where he's not going to learn the entire playbook, but he could be decent in certain areas, specifically the red zone. He's just got a lot of guys, DeMarcus Robinson or Conley. Like, those aren't elite guys, so you have to throw them open. Let's see if Mahomes can do that. The one thing that's kind of been alarming to me a little bit, I don't think the Chargers defense can replicate what the Ravens did, but the Chiefs were held to 5.3 yards per play last week. The Chargers defense certainly isn't as dynamic, but when you look at these trend lines, it's a combination of the schedule getting a little bit tougher for the Chiefs offense. I think it's a little bit to do with the familiarity with Reed and Mahomes, what they're doing. And then you're without Hunt. You're without Watkins. Tyreek isn't 100%. We've just seen a decline in the four offensive categories. And I know last week the scoreboard showed 27, but reality is you kind of squeak out 10 points right before the half there. You pick up that ridiculous third and 19, then you get poor clock management from the Ravens offense, and you get 10 points on the board right before half. And then you get the late points, Todd. I know you weren't happy with those. On the fourth and nine. Right?
No,
on the fourth
I was
and
not.
Nine, right? But they had 17 points up to that point. Let's see if the Chiefs offense can get back on track here. And I think that's partly why, right? Whether the Chargers woes, the Chiefs trend line coming down a little bit offensively. That's why we've seen under money. I don't know if it sticks. 52 did not stick. We're now back out to 54. I don't have a ton on this game, but it's just wildly fascinating. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I think it should be one of the more exciting games to watch, but much like you, I wish there was a real compelling gambling angle. Maybe you look to try and attack some of the prop markets that are there. If you put yourself in the shoes of Kansas City and their offensive game plan, trying to identify which running back is going to be the key cog. Maybe it's Damian Williams catching balls out of the backfield. You mentioned Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill. So many different options. Unfortunately, much like you, I don't have any strong sentiment one way or another, side or total, the way things stand now. And I've been burnt one too many times trying to back the Chargers against the Chiefs. I don't think I want to go to that well.
We've done it a lot over the years, I feel like.
Oh, we have. We
was
have.
Was it the playoff game a couple years back? That was just an absolute kick in the junk.
No, I feel like it was. I feel like it was a Saturday night game. Maybe it was last year.
Well, it was 2 years in a row. One was 2 years ago. A playoff game, or maybe okay. Yeah, yeah. It was a Saturday
because I know
night
we
game.
Had
yeah. in Arrowhead.
Yeah, it was a set. Yeah, exactly. It was a Saturday night game in Arrowhead, and I know we also gave out the Chargers early in the season last year before we put a moratorium on them when they played at home against Kansas City, and it was just one of those maddening games. Every time the Chargers got close, they found a way to self-destruct.
Clear coaching mismatch here, too.
So, exactly. I mean, and especially on a short week and everything else that goes into it. So, great game to watch. Not sure it is a great game to bet on. But before we bid a fond farewell to all of our loyal listeners for yet another glorious weekend of NFL viewing action, Payne, where are we going for our best bet?
I think we go back to the well with the San Francisco 49ers here. Plenty of 4.5 out there. So that's the way I am looking this week. It's a game that we've already bet. I still feel like this second number still has some value here. And it's just about the San Francisco 49ers being undervalued. That's just really how we feel about them. This isn't a three-win football team. You look at a lot of, you know, the adjusted for schedule metrics, and the San Francisco offense is one of the best in the NFL, even with Nick Mullins. Especially with Nick Mullins, as crazy as that's going to sound. I think the spot here is pretty good. You get that quick turnaround division revenge. And the scoreboard in that first meeting was just totally ridiculous. It was just a series of San Francisco pissing on their own leg. I mean, you had the Wilson fumble right around the five. You had the pick six. You had the muffed punt before half. So instead of getting points, Seattle gets points. If, again, San Francisco doesn't turn the ball over here, they have a shot to win this game outright, just like they did a week ago. You're looking at Seattle. How many games in a row can you get up for? And again, when you look at the standings, it looks like they're pretty set in stone now. They're going to be that wild card team. 99% chance to make the playoffs at this point, and they're pretty much locked into that five seed. So potential motivation issues here as well. We like San Francisco plus the points because there's just a lot of elements to like here.
Niners plus the points. 2 weeks in a row, baby. Similar price range. Get us a 20-0 lead at the half and let us coast to the finish line. So San Francisco, your best bet from the team here at Bet the Board. Special thanks to Dave Mason from BetOnline.ag, who joins us every single Thursday throughout the course of the NFL season. You, of course, can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. You can follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. You can follow Payne at Payne Insider, and I am Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter as well. Payne, before we close up shop for yet another work week, do you have any words of wisdom, you know, sound
like
bites, anything else you
want
to offer?
I feel like I shouldn't say this.
Generally speaking, when you say that, you probably shouldn't, but I'm going to give you the floor and let you say it anyways.
And I almost just derailed the entire Thursday night breakdown because we were talking about cats and dogs, and I was going to go on this little tangent here. I know we have a lot of female listeners. And this might be a better tip than the 49ers this week. The whole cat situation, that really just throws me off. The women and the cats, they got it. You got to get like 50% of the male population is like deathly allergic to cats. You're cutting off like half your dating talent pool. women, you got to get rid of the cats. Like, I'm deathly allergic. I won't even date a woman who's got a cat. Like, it's impossible. Could be like Cindy Crawford in her prime. Like, I'm not dating Cindy Crawford in her prime. Maybe a couple dinners, maybe back to my place like a few times. But I just can't date a woman with a cat.
Deathly allergic. I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure where that was going. I definitely didn't think it was going there. But hey, dating advice from Pain Insider will be part of the New York Times bestseller list somewhere down the road when you decide to maybe make it autobiographical. I'm not quite sure.
That's going to be an interesting book. Really is.
Oh. Well, when Payne shares where all the bodies are buried in the lovely gambling industry with dating tips to boot as interstitials between those various chapters, we all can't wait for it to hit bookshelves at a local retailer near you.
But I feel like you were going to give some dating cat advice there, but you decided not to.
No, I'm not. Here's the thing. I mean, I am
agree?
A dog owner. No, I'm not anti-cat. Oh. I'm a dog owner, but I'm not anti-cat.
I'm not anti-cat either. They look good from afar. Just don't get them close to me. I, like, you know, start to look like Chris Farley.
We have business to attend to. I won't share it with the listeners right now, but that's why we got to close up shop.
Oh, yes.
So,
it's starting to move a little bit.
Yep. Best of luck to all of you this fine weekend in the National Football League. And come Sunday afternoon before Sunday Night Football kicks off with a 49ers ticket in hand, we'll see you at the window.